Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Hope it was a good homecoming if you went to the Auburn game on Saturday. A beautiful weather. Once the rain got out of here early Saturday morning, it was really nice weather for the rest of the weekend. And hope everybody had a good weekend. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, and Drew here in the studio. Dan will be in momentarily. And then Brian Matthews, usually with us, is once again here on this Monday. Brian, of course, from AuburnSports.com. B-Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. 3-0 is a good place to be if you're Auburn right now.
Absolutely. You couldn't be any better.
That's right.
after three games, you can't be any better than 3-0. And now the tests really start. Auburn with this is quite the gauntlet that Auburn has coming up, starting with a trip to College Station Saturday morning.
It really is. Texas A&M is a quality program that recruited really well. They probably should be ranked regardless of how poorly they looked at Miami. It's going to be a really tough test. And then after that, of course, you've got Georgia at home. You get an off week, then you go to LSU, and you finish against Ole Miss, a ranked Ole Miss at home, which is playing a really big game against Alabama this weekend. Mm-hmm. So it is a tough, tough stretch. But if you can get through this stretch without getting beat up too much, if you can
more
continue to improve.
Can't beat up anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's probably one of, if not the biggest concern for Auburn right now, is just being able to field a healthy 22.
Yeah, and they lost an important player. Keontae Scott's going to be out for a while. He's going to have surgery on his ankle today. That's a thin position. If you just look at the defense in general, it's pretty thin across the board at every position. But I think they're going to move some pieces around the secondary, may move J.D. Rim over to a nickel to help out there. I think Donovan Kaufman is coming back from his injury this week, should be available for Texas A&M, so that helps there at that nickel-slash-star position. And would not be surprised, Caleb Wooden, who filled in the last two games of that position, won't be surprised to see him switch over to safety to help out some depth there. We'll see.
Yeah, now, I mean, so, they obviously hope they get Nehemiah. I mean, I thought, maybe we'd see him, but again, he couldn't go. He hadn't been out there yet. And then you had a couple of key losses during the game on Saturday on the offensive side, Cam Stutz and Tutal Miller.
Yeah.
Going down and not being able to play.
Two big ones. And Freeze said today he wasn't really sure of their status. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, no, that's a concern.
We do go to practice tomorrow afternoon, so we'll get a bird's eye view to see if they're out there and how they're looking. Nehemiah Pritchett, he was dressed out and practicing last week this time. So that's probably a good sign that, he wasn't able to come back against Samford, but probably a good sign he's going to be available this week.
Yeah, you would sure hope. You're going to need him.
Yes.
Connor Wigman is putting up some numbers. He's averaging right at 300 yards passing.
Yep. And they have some really talented receivers. So this is going to be a big test for this defense. Getting Jalen McLeod back healthy and rushing the pass will be really, really big for this defense. We talked to him today. He says he's ready to go. So that's a really important piece for this particular game for Auburn.
Yeah, because Hugh Freeze said it today. They've only been able to get pressure on the quarterback, get pass rush with somebody extra. They haven't been able to do it with the front.
Right, and I think Jalen is the one guy on the front that can change that. He can beat a guy one-on-one. He has beaten the Texas A&M right tackle. Not just beat him. If you go back and watch that tape, he just completely destroys him on that one play where he basically pancakes the offensive tackle. He strips the ball from the quarterback. The ball is picked up by another Texas A&M offensive lineman, and he strips the ball from that guy, and then another player recovers it, I think, for App State. So that was just an incredible play he made last year for App State against A&M. And, you know, Auburn will need some of that, I think, Saturday.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. I mean, we'll talk more about that matchup, go into some thoughts and analysis of the homecoming win, 45-13 over Samford. I know we talked about it last week, Brian, and it pretty much was what we'd said. I mean, they threw the ball around, and that's something they needed to do.
They really did, and Peyton Thorne, of course, looked incredible. 405, I think it was, total yards of total offense. Yards of total offense is the most that we could come up with since Nick Marshall in 2014. That's a heck of a guy to be compared against. That was the 2014
Iron Bowl. Yeah, he had 500 yards total offense in that game. 454 passing or something.
Yeah, incredible. And Nick Marshall, of the guys I've covered, he's been one of the most special players, you know, I would have to say. Just his talent and his leadership and just his just mental and physical toughness. That dude was a baller.
Thorne and Marshall are very different types of quarterbacks. I mean, Marshall was very successful. What I thought, and I think this is a compliment, and I don't want to blow it out of proportion because it was Samford, but when Thorne was playing well, he looked like Jarrett Stidham. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I thought Stidham, you know, and good Jarrett Stidham, the Jarrett Stidham that was good enough to beat the number one team in the country a couple of times at Jordan-Hare Stadium, the Jordan-Hare Stadium that got Auburn to the SEC championship game, the Jordan-Hare Stadium that had the best performance, considering the quarterback still. I mean, Jarrett Stidham in that bowl game, right, when it was the Purdue game, right, where it was obscene what Auburn was able to do. Like that version of – which – to say nothing of guys who have played quarterback since the 2018 season ended, including Bo Nix. Like, Auburn's had quality quarterback play at times, but I really thought that Peyton Thorne looked so much more comfortable than he had in the first two games, decisive. There were a couple of missed reads or mistakes, but very few of them. I think all told, the most egregious one was probably the deep ball interception in the back of the end zone where he had –
two guys wide open on that play.
A couple of guys closer to the first down marker that were alone in the middle of the field.
I think it was it? I'm trying to remember. Was it Shorter? I believe
Shorter and Rivaldo
was open both. For about a first down. Yeah. Rivaldo was open. It would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, there were, but that's really the only is it through the air. That was the only one where, you know, it felt like Peyton Thorne had a mistake that you could really see from where we were standing. Even the interception, you know, we were right behind the receiver in the press box.
That wasn't a terrible throw. No,
seemed like it hit him somewhere near the numbers and went careening into the air. And you know, and so maybe Peyton Thorne put too much mustard on it. I don't know, but like
be expecting it to come fast.
Yeah,
I mean, the end zone.
My bigger issue was with the play calling after Jeremiah Cobb was out of bounds at the 1 yard line on that drive, right? And I get I think even JG asked this at the press conference. They were working some things out and seeing who they can rely on for fades and the goal line and stuff like that, getting Thorne some live reps in that situation. But you don't want to leave points on the board, and Auburn probably did on that first drive because they wanted to work out on some things at the goal line instead of just powering it through Samford. But for the most part, no, I thought it was a really promising performance by Robbie Ashford. We were saying last week, or by Peyton Thorne, I mean, there was a question of how much Ashford will you see, you know, will they continue to find an outsized role for the backup quarterback and get him touches. I really thought it would be a healthy thing if the game allows this. You know, I was really thinking it'd be healthy for Peyton Thorne to have the whole half to himself and have it be his team and his show and not worry about the backup quarterback coming in on the next play if it's a mistake or a certain situation. And I thought Peyton Thorne looked, you know, I'll get back to that word, right? He looked comfortable. He looked decisive, and his play improved accordingly. Like I thought it was a really pro. I mean,
yeah, and he got the first three quarters.
Yeah, don't want to blow it out of proportion, but I mean, I thought it was I thought it seemed like a real step in the right direction for the Auburn offense.
And then Hugh Freeze asked about that quarterback rotation, and Brian, I mean, what we saw is I think what you're going to see. You're going to see Robbie come in situations and have some opportunities, but Peyton's the guy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said. That's the rotation he wants to see this week. But he did say, as long as they're playing well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
Well, sure. You can ask any any coach about his quarterbacks. Right. And if the quarterback's not starting, quarterback's not playing well, they're probably going
to
be
changed. But if we're talking about a benching, I would say after Saturday, Peyton Thorne doesn't seem to be anywhere close to being benched as Auburn's starting quarterback.
No.
After the way he played. So, I mean, you could see more Robbie in the event of. You could see a lot more Robbie in the event of a benching or an injury. But Peyton Thorne looked healthy and decisive and confident as the quarterback, which, again, step in the right direction. You don't want to be shuffling and wondering about who the quarterback is going to be getting into league play, especially when you play four teams that were ranked in the preseason AP Top 25 poll, the only time all season that a team will have a four-game stretch where all four of the teams were ranked in the preseason AP Top 25.
Right.
And three of those teams, as Hugh Freeze pointed out today, I'll punt over to Brian Matthews. How well have Auburn's next three opponents recruited? What's a true statement you could say about the recruiting of A&M, Georgia, and LSU combined? Have they all been
top five?
They've. I mean, yeah, that's
they've,
what
they've all had at least one. Yeah. In Georgia's case,
been one
nothing
or two.
But.
Yeah.
And LSU, most of the time, A&M's had a couple. All top ten though. All their players were brought in. The guys who signed with any of the three schools signed top 10 classes.
So, not to put Auburn into, because I think Auburn has a chance to win this game on Saturday. But so everyone who signed with A&M out of high school on this team that Auburn's going to see on Saturday was part of a top 10 class.
Maybe a fifth-year senior.
Last year's class was not in the top 10, but the
one before was number one.
Yeah, the 2022 class was number one, and 21, let me look real quick. I think it was pretty high, too. Not quite top five. Let's see. Oh, seventh.
Yeah.
So 7, 1, and 14. Those are the last three classes.
And you would think after you've had classes, top 10 classes back to back or back to back to back, that the freshmen this year aren't going to get as much of an opportunity to play. But I mean, they're very talented squads, all three of the next three teams.
Very, very talented, absolutely. Of course, Georgia's had the number one or number two class.
Every year. They and Alabama back and forth, usually, except for that one year for A&M.
And then LSU, of course, recruits extremely well. Their classes are always rated high. Plus, in the state of Louisiana, there's so many great athletes. Even some of their guys you may not have heard about turn out to be really good just because of that state. And then Ole Miss, I'm not so sure they're on the level talent-wise. You know, I think Auburn's really close to Ole Miss talent-wise.
But those first three recruited out of high school. And Hugh Freeze drew a comparison. I thought it was maybe one of the more noteworthy parts of the press conference today was Hugh Freeze talking about, you know, warning people about what you're going to see the next couple of weeks because there are spots on the rosters of all three of these teams where the experts, the recruiting folks would tell you there's a lot more talent at this spot on the roster for A&M than there is for Auburn or that spot on the roster. I would say as position groups, A&M's got guys at, help me out here, Bill, receiver, offensive line.
Defensive line,
edge rusher. You know, that comes to mind immediately as spots where A&M has multiple guys that were probably bigger recruits out of high school than anyone that Auburn has on the roster.
It's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, so there's a couple spots where – and that could – you know, we were talking about Jalen McLeod. Like, Auburn's attempted at a couple of key spots to bring in the best Power 5 or Group of 5 player they could find maybe even try with multiple guys to make up for a lack of production on the roster. And I think we may – the concern would be over the next couple of weeks that we'll see the limit of that. We'll see how far that can get you against top-tier SEC competition.
Well, and like we were talking a few minutes ago, Auburn needs to get healthy, too. Some of their top guys are not 100%. And so if you have to start going further down the line, that's going to make it even more difficult.
I saw someone saying, this upcoming game is a must-win.
Mm-hmm. It's a must-win for Texas A&M.
Yes. See, yeah, like I think Auburn not to concede anything.
No, and you absolutely don't go, oh well, it doesn't matter if you lose. It does.
It
big
does.
Time matter if you lose. But it is much more. I said this earlier today that this game is the kind of win that Florida got this past weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim, there were you saw the report Saturday that big money people have got the money. If Jimbo doesn't come through this year, they're ready to go ahead and make a move. So they lose this one, that money is going to be starting to get gathered very quickly.
Yeah, and it's a the beginning of a really tough stretch for A&M as well. We've talked about the stretch Auburn is about to begin. A&M's got a stretch where I think the next four for A&M are Auburn, Arkansas, Bama, and Tennessee. And so, I mean, it's a tough four-game stretch for Texas A&M, and I don't think they have a bye week.
No, they don't.
I think that's just their
bye week comes after their trip to Knoxville.
Yeah, their next four games are Bama, Arkansas.
They're fortunate though; they don't leave the state of Texas until they go to Tennessee.
That's right. Three straight games in Texas. One of them at AT&T.
Yep.
In between two home games before they go to Knoxville. So, I mean, yeah, it's a make or break stretch for A&M as well. But yeah, Auburn is. I was enthused about some of the steps Auburn took offensively on Saturday night. Cautiously optimistic about what could happen on Saturday, but A&M has, you know, a couple of spots where when they're playing well, you remember why they were, you know, they have defensive linemen or defensive ends who were among the top recruits in the country coming out of high school.
All right, we're just getting underway. We'll go ahead and get to our first break. Love for you to join in. How can you do so? Well, you can call us 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which you can get however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center.
Bill, Dan, and Brian, Drew at the controls. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
At 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 21 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews. Yes, another interesting weekend, to say the least, this past weekend. I mean, and here in the SEC. How many people saw Florida dominating Tennessee?
I mean, Tennessee was
not
the favorite,
me.
Right?
Yeah, Tennessee was the favorite. And, I mean, Florida spanked them. Not even. And then, of course, maybe a rain, maybe the weather delay had something to do with it, but Alabama and USF, 3-3 into the – you know, the middle of the third quarter and a 10-3 ball game going into the final couple of minutes
so
of the game.
It was the weather that made Alabama decide that both quarterbacks who played aren't going to be the quarterback this upcoming Saturday?
No, I'll tell you what it is. I heard Greg McElroy say this morning. And now, look, I've not had anything bad to say about Greg McElroy's commentary for quite a while. I think he's very fair. But today, it sounded like pure Bammer. Today, it was... Well, Alabama's not that talented. They've been getting bumps because of the reputation that Alabama has. Now, that's what, that Brian, you've been hearing that. We've been hearing that for 15, 20 years. And I do think
from
there
Auburn,
is something.
From Auburn people.
From Auburn people. And I do think there is something to it. When Alabama goes after a player, everyone naturally thinks, well, they must be a little better than we thought. You know, so they're going to get
true
a bit of a bump.
Is that true of Georgia now, too? Is that maybe also true of Georgia?
There, yeah. Getting there with Georgia. But to try to tell me Alabama's not that talented,
ridiculous.
Greg, I don't think that's the case.
How about this?
I think most teams would swap rosters with Alabama.
Oh, but when you're not that talented at quarterback, or you don't appear to be, can't that weigh everything down in a way?
They didn't play their most talented quarterback this past week, who is now the starter again.
I asked you.
Because he showed such leadership on the sidelines Saturday.
If Bryce Young had come back for a fourth year of college
Alabama
football,
Alabama would be unbeaten.
Would be unbeaten, and we wouldn't be talking about offensive talent
how about
issues.
How about the other hand? If Alabama had played these quarterbacks last year?
You want to hear what the last three classes, number one last year, number two the year before, number one the year before that.
That's right. But they're not that talented.
Yeah, right.
Well, here to your point, Dan, and Brian, think about this. Had Alabama played those two quarterbacks that we saw Saturday last year, how many games would they have won? Seven or eight?
Right. Think about how many games.
And that's with a very talented roster. Yeah. You've got to get better quarterback play than Alabama had the other day.
And that's how – I mean, look, I don't want to – I would love to be – on Monday's show, coming out here and being like, look, it's over. Ole Miss by multiple touchdowns this Saturday in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, we'll see.
I've seen too many scary movies, right? October's coming, and I've seen people celebrate, yeah, Freddy Krueger's dead. Ha ha, it's over.
Yeah, that's
finally.
Right.
And, you know, or Michael Myers. Yeah, they finally got him. That's, look, if Ole Miss goes to Bama and wins and convincingly.
And soundly beats Alabama, is the better team.
We will be in uncharted territory
right
as far
that.
As the Saban era at Alabama. We will not have had multiple. How about this? Saban has lost one game at home by double digits as a head coach.
Yes.
If Ole Miss makes it two.
In a row,
we're in uncharted territory as far as the Saban era goes. And it would be two Saban assistants doing it in Tuscaloosa. Love Nick Saban. I love Lane Kiffin stirring the pot about the defensive coordinator this weekend. I think that is, I mean, to now Nick Saban's got to answer questions about that. And what do you think Kiffin's right? Do you think he's telling the truth?
Know.
Or
I don't know. Well, do you know Lane would about? Know. Yeah. I mean, Lane would have an idea of the kind of defense.
It was refuted by Saban and or Alabama today, but I don't know.
Kiffin's
stirring the pot. He's trying to do is distract people.
Drew,
I mean,
you know
Lane loves to do that.
So yesterday, Lane Kiffin answered a question about Kevin Steele by suggesting that a change was made, and it's actually Treveris Robinson calling the defense for Alabama.
Yeah, he said he's gone against Kevin Steele. He coached with Kevin Steele at Alabama, and he's gone against Kevin Steele quite a few times when Kevin was at Auburn. He knows a Kevin Steele defense and said, that wasn't a Kevin Steele defense. That looks like a Treveris Robinson defense.
Yes. He even says, I don't know what happened during the Texas game. But he indicates there was a moment where he believes a change was made as far as who's calling plays for Alabama's defense. So that's another thing to keep an eye on as the season. I mean, there's so much focus on Alabama's quarterback play, deservedly so.
What were his comments a couple of times ago when they were heading to Tuscaloosa? Remember? Lane had some smart, and Alabama beat the out of him.
Oh, and that could happen on
it
Saturday.
Could. I mean, Jalen Milroe's going back to quarterback. It's going to be really interesting to see. Does Tommy Rees change his offense to fit Jalen Milroe, or do they keep trying to squeeze Jalen Milroe into that, you know,
think about
slot that he doesn't fit?
Think about how long it's been since a conference, since an SEC team went to Tuscaloosa, and it looked like they had the edge at quarterback and running back. Think about that, because I would say right now that's probably true of Ole Miss.
Alabama's offensive line sure doesn't look.
But Jackson Dart's arguably. I mean, he's been a top three quarterback in the league through the first three games of the season. Considering
probably.
Competition, like I mean, I didn't have that one in the preseason, but
well, who would you? I mean, Wegman has too,
and
Rattler's been pretty good.
Daniels. Fellow at LSU.
There have been a few guys.
Even Wentz had his moments against.
He looked really good. Tennessee.
I didn't have that one, but I think this
Mertz.
This slate. Oh yeah, Mertz. Not. Did I say
Wentz.
Graham Wentz. Yeah, that's not right. I got the Z. I got the ending syllable correctly.
I think a lot of people thought that was Ethel Mertz playing, not Graham earlier.
So this is a really exciting
Fred.
This is a really exciting weekend coming up because there
it
are a
is.
Lot of big. I mean, there a lot of big games where it feels like we're going to have a lot more information about some of these teams that you're wondering about, Auburn included, and you get to see them play a high stakes game against an opponent that you feel pretty confident can give them a challenge.
LSU's got Arkansas too this weekend. I mean, there are some fun games, especially here in the West.
Auburn, Oregon. Colorado, Oregon. Bo against
Oregon, a pretty solid favorite in that ball game.
Understandably, although that's nationally maybe going to be the game of the week. I mean,
based on viewing patterns, it will be until Colorado is buried.
Yeah,
and probably still will be.
People, the fad may wear off a little bit at that point. But I mean, I saw the viewers. I mean, Colorado State started at 10:20 p.m. Eastern.
And ended way after my bedtime.
And it was the most viewed game of the day, by far,
in
viewership numbers-wise. Which, I mean, when you think about it, you had the reigning national champion at 2:30 playing a game that was compelling for a couple of quarters.
It really was.
On CBS. And yet, the Colorado game on ESPN.
They were trailing. I mean, they were down 14-3, Georgia was.
I mean, so that thing's a freight train at the moment as far as the attention it's getting nationally. But, I mean, what, you got Ohio State, Notre Dame? This week that's Saturday night I believe on on NBC, and yeah, a lot of really compelling games this weekend. I'm excited to see what it looks like.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour. Right, love your take on any of the games this past weekend or anything coming up. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through here on The Drive.
Free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Hey, let's congratulate Auburn High's Henry Allen. He is this week's Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. Henry was responsible for 3 touchdowns Friday night, 1 through the air, 2 on the ground, as Auburn won 46-0 over Jag. It was 44-0 at the half. Henry Allen, your Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through. Dan stepping up for a second. He'll be right back in. But let's get to the phone lines. And Spectre is up first. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, listen, I advocated for keeping the ones out there in this game to build the confidence and cohesiveness.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you're subject to pay a price for it, and we did by the injuries.
Yeah, but you know, the injuries, a lot of the injuries happened early. Keontae Scott went out in the first quarter. He went out in the first
both
series.
Both offensive linemen were out early.
Cam Stutz went out in the first on the first or second series. Yeah. A lot of the guys that got hurt before the end of the first quarter. That was the strangest thing to me is I was noticing these other guys were in there, and it's like I just thought they were resting them, and it turned out most of those players were out injured early.
Well, do you think it was because it was a lack of warm-up or what?
No, I don't think so. A lot. It's just one of those things.
Sometimes
football
can play that game with you, right? Like the football gods are fickle, and they can give you a lot of injuries.
Yeah,
it's part
of the game.
It's tough. You know, I mean, they did. They stretched and everything. Keontae Scott, I don't know exactly when he did it, but it was an ankle. With Izavian Miller, I couldn't tell if it was an ankle or a knee. But, yeah. I mean, it was just – you know, guys stepping the wrong way or, you know, planning.
And
sometimes
there's collisions in football that make you think, oh, assuredly somebody's injured. And they both get up and they're fine. And then things that seem...
Other times, a guy's just running out in open space.
Things can seem routine and a guy goes down and his career is impacted forever. So, yeah. I mean, I'm looking for rhyme or reason in why guys are getting hurt is going to be tough.
Well, I will say that Peyton had a pretty good game, but I don't want to diminish what he accomplished on the field Saturday night. But you know, it was Samford,
right? Absolutely. But he needed to play like that against a Samford.
Yeah,
if he struggled against Samford, then you'd really be concerned.
Some of the stuff that didn't really seem to be opponent related that he was cutting back on, like the footwork, right? Like he just seemed to be more decisive in where he was throwing it and how the ball was getting there. And I mean, that seems like, I mean, yes, to expect similar results every week when you played Samford and now you're playing SEC opponents, like that's probably too much. But I thought I thought Peyton cut down on some of the most worrisome things that we saw the first 2 weeks, and especially what we saw against Cal.
Yeah, I agree with that. But we'll see how he does against A&M.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I was going to say something about that. A&M... Who did ULM play?
Yeah, that was A&M.
A&M just beat ULM this weekend.
Okay. But I was looking at the rosters and the coaching staff. Do you realize how many Auburn connections we have on both teams?
Well, I mean, you got a Bowden. Terry Bowden, the head coach at ULM. Jimbo.
Yeah.
Jimbo himself.
Otis Mounds is on that team with Bowden.
Didn't realize that.
Wow.
Yeah, and also you got on A&M. You got Damian Craig, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I can't think of anybody else. Yeah. No, Jimbo Fisher,
sure.
Of course. But I was astounded about the Auburn connection on both teams.
Yeah, and of course, Jimbo Fisher, of course, has connections to the Bowdens as well. Right, he was Bobby's. Yeah. He was Bobby's assistant. Those last couple of years at Florida State.
Well, anyway, that's all I got for today, guys.
Appreciate the call, Spectre. 334-321-1390. Yeah, we'd love your thoughts. And yes, Auburn should have put up good numbers against Samford. That was, but the point is, I mean, they needed to do that. They needed to build confidence. Threw the ball around. I guess 10 different guys caught passes. Now, it's still, I still couldn't tell you, all right, who's the go-to outside guy? Is it Shane Hooks?
Right now it is. He's the one catching.
He caught three. He was targeted a little more.
Yeah.
He nearly made the one-hand catch in the end zone, which I know Dan sitting beside me was like remembering Marcus Davis.
Right, yeah.
Two hands.
Yeah, so okay, there was a – I don't remember if I told the story on the air. I know I told Bill about it.
No, you didn't tell it on the air.
So, Brian, we were at one of the open practice windows, and I was talking with a couple guys from the beat. We were watching the receivers work on stuff in the end zone, and I noticed that more than once Shane Hooks – deliberately tried to make a one-handed catch, like go up and try to catch like the ball.
This was after he made that spectacular catch that everybody got to see on video in the scrimmage.
And he, after two attempts where he did not come down with the ball, we heard Marcus Davis yell two hands at him. And so I was thinking, like, you know, maybe sometimes the temptation to get the
Sports Center.
Maybe sometimes you need to not do the 360 dunk.
And
right?
I don't know that he could have gotten both hands out and caught that one where we thought he was going to slam into the wall.
Yeah, give me the layup. Oh, yeah, I was worried about
that. That was the one where, I could see why you keep a hand for protection.
Yeah,
on
you know what? That makes me, seeing him slide into the wall like that makes me nervous about the distance between the end line of the wall.
How much padding is there?
But
down
then also how close some of those new seats are to action. Like, I mean, you could really,
somebody could be running through the prime seats, checking out the TV screen.
You didn't sign up for that.
And have somebody hurdling your table?
I'm sure there's a way.
Oh, what a shot that would be!
I'm sure
it would
be
like the eagle. How close it came! You weren't there for
that.
I
was underneath the eagle.
The eagle flew right in front of us there at the press box.
I was in my parents' seats. It was right on top of us.
Like it was about as close as Drew is to me right now when it flew in front of the
eagle
window.
Eagle did a 360 loop in front front of the press box window. And was headed towards, for a moment, was headed straight for the window before looping around.
I was going, somebody call it. Please, throw some bait up.
Yeah. It was coming. It was headed right. You know what? The eagle was headed right for us in the press box, and the plane was headed right for us.
I thought the fuel line was going to, drag the scoreboard.
That thing, I'll tell you what. I'm well-sourced in this, Bill. I know for a fact that the FAA wants you flying at least 500 feet above sea.
Don't think it was quite that high.
I do not believe. Now the tanker, that fella may have been flying, that thing might have been flying 500 feet above the ground, but that thing was not 500 feet above the top of the jumbotron.
I was like,
I don't want to be part of
the...
I don't want to be at the last flyover. Okay, that's like, I don't want to be at the last one do.
When top of the press box gets hooked by that, that'd be one way to.
I cannot stand the giant TV or the press box, but I don't want to be there when it goes out. Right?
I don't want to be in it while it's being,
I mean, it was incredible.
Transported.
Incredible visual for the people.
It was.
I mean, we could hear people cheering, like just before the plane came into sight too.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, what's? Because it was blocked by maybe the scoreboard, and it was like, what is that?
Blocked by that scoreboard.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. It was. No, we saw. Maybe it came into view, but that thing was.
That was wildness there in the pregame.
But what for an FCS opponent, like what an atmosphere, right? Like what a crowd to have at kickoff. What a crowd to have starting in the second half.
I think his mic's up already.
Okay, yeah, he might be up already, Drew. I thought the folks, I think Hugh Freeze started off the press conference talking about it today. The folks really showed up on Saturday, and I think that's, I mean, three, between the opener, homecoming, and then, what, in a week and a half or so, you get Georgia.
Yep.
Georgia,
2:30.
Three big September outings at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
You said you're already reading the complaints.
Let's talk about the 2:30 thing in a second. I know Dak's hanging on. We'll get to him first.
All right, let's get to Dak. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys, that's exactly what I was going to talk about. I'm so disappointed that we're playing at 2:30.
Yeah, I don't know, Dak. I guess I remember too many huge SEC games at 2:30, where like that's the main event of the day, right? Like, I mean, Auburn LSU from 04 and 06 and countless 2:30 Iron Bowls and Georgia games. Like
Auburn Georgia games. Of course, that would be after daylight savings time is gone and it's dark at halftime.
I get why folks think like night games are more fun or whatever, but to me, like a 2:30 game feels like a huge game because it means you're the main event of the day in the conference.
But guys, we had a chance. I believe we had a chance to beat Georgia at night. The atmosphere is just totally different in the daytime. And did you see who's going to be on at night over us? Just don't make sense. Okay. Alabama, Michigan State.
CBS. CBS has the first pick. Yeah, the game of the week is the game CBS chooses to put on broadcast television at 2:30.
I get that, guys, but man, there's a reason why LSU wants their night games, and you wait and see. We will be at LSU at night.
Well,
what y'all think?
I wouldn't be surprised. No, wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, the one exception in the league as far as putting the biggest games at night would be LSU. Like that's the one place where consistently, like Bama LSU is probably the one game in the league that's consistently a night game, despite the teams being top five, top ten when they play. Pretty much every other game in the league is slotted for that of the marquee games. Slotted for that 2:30 or is consistently a 2:30 rivalry game.
But you can't be upset that the top choice picks your game. I mean, I can understand being a little disappointed that it's not at night, but it would have almost been a little bit of a slap if CBS didn't take the Auburn Georgia game.
The only game I thought CBS could have taken if they'd used the 6-day window. There's a chance.
If Ole Miss beats Alabama.
Yeah, because A&M Ole Miss is that day, right? Like, there was a chance.
LSU Ole Miss, isn't it?
You're right. It is LSU Ole Miss. There's a chance that, LSU Ole Miss could have been a bigger game if both of those teams won this weekend. But, no, I was not surprised at all. And I don't – I guess I mean, I was at Jordan-Hare in 2017 when Georgia came in at 2:30 and when Alabama came in at 2:30. And that was a top – I mean that's as electric as
those were later though, so it was dark.
But it was
when the game
the game kicked off at 2:30.
Down. Right.
I mean and the LSU game in 04. Like that's as loud as that is an all time moment, Jordan-Hare.
Well, Cam Newton's run against LSU in 2010, that was a 2:30 game, right?
Yep. Yeah.
We had a number of top five defenses in the country. You know, that's the difference, and it's just different. It's hard to play at Jordan-Hare at night. I hear it from a lot of different guys, you know, that has played us, and I've coached against guys, and I know Georgia's happiest at 2:30. I can tell you that.
Oh, I'm sure they're happier than it being at night. That's right. But I don't know. There aren't too many Alabama people that'll tell you that Auburn's great to play at whatever time.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All right, Dak. Appreciate the call. That's interesting, though. I mean, because that's what you were talking about, just the concern that some people are putting out there and how disappointed they are.
Yeah, it feels like to be disappointed that you're not playing at night because you've been selected as the 2:30 game on CBS feels like is that a thing for like younger fans?
I know you've been going to Auburn games for longer than me, but I've been going to Auburn games since 1985. The best in-person atmosphere I've ever witnessed is the 89 Iron Bowl at Jordan-Hare Stadium. The first time ever. I don't remember the exact kickoff time, but I remember it being early
afternoon.
Yeah, it was early afternoon. Finishing in the twilight, or was it dark? Yeah.
I don't want to sound dismissive or snide about this, but if you – I don't know. I've been to too many big games at Jordan-Hare at 2:30.
Yeah.
To think, it's a totally different thing at night.
Yeah.
It's a totally different thing when Auburn's good and a nationally ranked team is in the house at 2:30.
And I'll add this: if you looked at Auburn's crowd for UMass, for Samford, terrific for those two teams. It is going to be incredible for Georgia and the other big home games Auburn's got this year. Of course, the Iron Bowl is going to be incredible no matter what time it kicks off. I just give the fans out there a lot of credit for what they've already done for two non-conference, you know, games that people usually don't care that much about. Mm-hmm. Just a chance to go to a game.
You hearing positive stuff from recruits about the Auburn atmospheres these first couple weeks?
The things you don't hear about usually for these type games, right? So, yeah.
That's definitely what I thought about, you know, with the crowd at kickoff on Saturday and then in the second half, because there used to be the talk of, especially games like Samford, you'd see the mass exodus. Auburn has done a great job of turning the beginning of the fourth quarter into an event at Jordan-Hare Stadium that people don't want to miss and people, you know, stick around for. So, yeah, I think it's I was curious about whether or not that's rubbed off on recruits at all, as far, you know, the impact that the Auburn fan base has made these first couple of weeks.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time. We're not even halfway done here on the Monday Drive.
Whether you're a senior.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes of hour number one. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, while we got a little bit of time, let everybody know what all's going on there at AuburnSports.com.
Well, we got a chance to interview Coach Freeze earlier today and several players, and got coverage of that already up at our site and continue to have stories from that. We'll get to go to practice tomorrow afternoon, so we'll have updates from that, some video. We'll also get together for our podcast tomorrow and continue to roll out the recruiting and football coverage leading up to this weekend. AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter at BMattAU.
We are rapidly approaching the start of basketball season, too. I know some places put
moving
out.
Right,
I know a couple programs put out infographics today or yesterday. We're coming up on 50 days from the opener for some of these schools. So, it's an interesting time in the world of sports. AuburnSports.com is where you need to be. Where you need to be to learn about everything going on with this program.
We'd love to hear from you. We're about to head to our top of the hour break, but we'd love to get your thoughts. I know it's hard to take an awful lot from the Auburn game this past week. I mean, there are some things that are, I'd say you've got to be a little concerned about. Auburn could not just, they didn't look like they could just line up and run the ball at Samford. And I know Samford was playing eight in the box and sometimes more, but it still was a little surprising that they couldn't push on that. Auburn had a couple of third and ones where they were just stuffed.
And there were times where maybe if Thorne had kept instead of handing to the running back, you felt like there would have been a more positive play there, although you wonder how intentional that was. Was Thorne told to get the ball into the running back's hand and keep things going? I think the most concerning thing out of Saturday is the injury to Keontae Scott, right?
Like that's
a tough one.
Yeah, really that's a huge loss. A leader in the secondary and an outstanding punt returner. And you saw Auburn, you know, going through a couple of other guys. They're going to be auditioning more this week.
If you had asked me on opening day to rank the five most valuable players on this team, guys where a season-long injury would hurt the most, it would have been hard to leave Keontae Scott off that list. Like, he would have been one of the five guys that this team needs all season long, the most in my mind. And to lose him before conference play starts, and it seems like a season ender, right? Like, is that the buzz on?
Maybe.
You think he could come back? Yeah. He could come back.
I mean, ankle surgery. The quote that Euphries had was considerable time. Unless he says he won't be back, you know, he'll miss the rest of the season. I consider that an opportunity to come back.
He didn't say rest of the season. Right. I mean, and we don't know. I mean, is it a break? Is it a strength? I mean, if it's a high ankle, we've seen guys come back with that new tightrope type surgery in a few weeks. Oof. But, I mean, I don't know. But they won't have him. They probably won't have him through this four-game stretch we've just been talking about.
And we do have that off week coming up after Georgia. So that gives an extra week in there for him to rehab.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Dan joined by Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, who is with us as is usually the case on Mondays. Got Drew at the controls. And hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And they're also... They also sponsor the Player of the Week, and this week the Orthopedic Clinic Player of the Week is Auburn High's Henry Allen, who was responsible for three touchdowns, two on the ground, one through the air, as Auburn with a big 46-0 win over JAG over in Montgomery this past Friday night. So congratulations to Henry Allen, the Orthopedic Player, Orthopedic Clinic Player of the Week.
Auburn has Percy Julian, right?
On
Friday. That's the former Lee. They just played JAG, the former Jeff Davis, and region play. Yeah, they still got Opelika coming up. They still got Central on the schedule. I mean, it is not done, and we've got a lot of big games still to talk about coming up, and you can catch all that on Wings 94.3. Scott Bagwell and company do a great job. We'll talk to Scott later in the week, as the Auburn High School season continues.
Let's get to the phones, and you can get through to us by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Outstanding week of shows last week. If you missed any of the podcasts, check them out on your favorite podcasting platform. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Speaking of ESPNAU.com, that's also where you can stream the show live. If you can't listen on ESPN 106.7, I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to say on the air. Big streaming numbers in August. I'm told a lot of folks listening live on the stream want to shout out everybody listening at ESPNAU.com. And enjoying the show that way.
Well, let's get to one of those streaming listeners, I believe. And that would be Tex. Hey, Tex.
How you doing, Tex?
Well, hey, guys. I'm glad you didn't call me a screaming listener. So,
Not today.
I do have to stream. Yeah. Until it gets dark. When it gets dark, your signal comes in better down here. So, anyway, Brian, thank you for all you do. I know that's a lot of hard work that you put in.
Well, appreciate
but
it.
But you made my day talking about December 2nd.
Yep.
I can remember getting there from Baton Rouge on Thursday night at about 6 and going out and coming in much, much later than I should have. And, yes, my spouse was with me, sleeping for 3 hours, getting up and basically starting all over and sleeping 2 hours Friday night.
Yep.
And then not sleeping Saturday after the game. It was the most exciting, I don't know the words to use, anything that you could think that might be the most joyous thing in your life, that was it.
And that day
was it. Yeah.
And that Tiger Walk was the first time it was really, really Tiger Walk. Like, it was incredible. You can still look back at pictures of that
tension
today.
The tension was unbelievable. It was hard to breathe that day.
Yep.
Bo Peep ran on the field and then had to go back in and throw up and come back out. James Joseph. So let me just tell you, oh, gosh. I thought I was going to have a heart attack about 20 times during that game. But I've never been in an environment, including the national championship game or SEC game or beating them in Birmingham when Bo went over the top. Even that, because of the number of opposing fans that were there, that game was just so different and so intense. I think that, again, it comes back to winning. Plus, on that day, that was the first time ever, so it was earned. Second thing, congratulations to the young kicker. I'm sorry I don't remember his name, but I just heard the story by his dad, who's the pastor, on the commercial.
Yeah, Marshall.
Isn't that cool? Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's the coolest thing.
Congratulations to Marshall and his whole family, because I can't imagine how special that's got to be for them.
Well, I saw his reaction, and it never struck me. You know, we were just – it just didn't strike me. But his reaction was really cool, and I saw the reaction of the players, and I didn't know the story, and it's really, really a cool story. So it's I hope he gets to kick a few more before the end of the year. He did a really nice job, and comes in as a good kid. So here's my questions. Bill, you were talking about them jamming the line of scrimmage. Not only were they jamming their line of scrimmage, they were running guys all over the place. They were stunting and spinning and twisting on us. But when Robbie came in, they ran a four-man front. And somebody's like, well, why are they able to run the football now? Well, because they got a guard against the quarterback running. I agree with Dan may have suggested a minute ago. I don't think we started calling runs for Peyton until after that. I think they were all called to gives or he scrambled. But when he takes off, he changes the whole outlook of that defense.
Yeah.
And there are multiple times if he pulls the ball. If we were truly running an RPO, we were only running the R part, is what it looks like. The way the line's blocking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. On the handoffs where he didn't keep it right.
Yes.
And this is old school. This is old school text, but I also would understand the thought that if you plan on having a quarterback all season and a lot of how far your team can go is based on that quarterback's ability, maybe you don't call too many design runs for him against an FCS opponent. Like, maybe he doesn't need to take that many. And you know, not that you want to play scared or anything, but I can understand why you'd want to reduce the number of times your quarterback is going to run the ball when you're playing against Samford.
Well, just because you're a head coach in FCS doesn't make you a knucklehead, and it didn't take him too long to figure out what we were going to do. So they knew what we were going to do, and it's hard to win with 5-6 against 8.
Right.
It really is, no matter at what level you're playing. It's hard to win with 5 or 6 trying to block against 8. So I'll take that with a grain of salt. Two things I noticed. I thought Robbie Ashford threw some very nice footballs Saturday night. And I thought Thorne, you mentioned this, Dan, he moved better. He was quick to decide, and the ball came out. I mean, it's just he looked like a different guy to me. Now, I don't know if that's because he was not on the road. He was at home. I don't know. But it looked a little bit different to me. So I think this weekend's going to be extremely exciting. Personally, if I'm on the road, I would rather play at 11 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No question. That's what you always want. Hope that you get a sleepy home crowd. Plus, you don't have time. You and the team don't have time to sit around and be thinking about things. You just get up, go play.
That is correct. By the way, the stream on the phone is working perfectly well, Bill. Remember I told you last week that I was able to get, it's not up there anymore.
Oh,
it went away.
That's crazy.
It won't come through. But
well,
that's the thing.
That might be something. You might check with your folks and see if they made a change in something.
They may have figured out I was listening to sports instead of working.
Yeah, maybe you don't ask. That's right. I guess not. Hey, what's
all right, guys.
That's like,
we'll talk.
All right. Appreciate it, Tex.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that was like when I was managing an apartment complex, and we, as my roommate and I, as managers, we had cable. And we realized, there was a connection upstairs where everybody was supposed to be hooked up to an antenna that was up on top of the building. We unplugged our cable, plugged it in, and everybody had cable.
Wow.
Until there was a storm, and one of the girls in the apartment called the cable company and said, our cable's out. And she went, you don't have cable. And you know what? None of us did then. So, yeah, maybe not wise to check on that, Tex.
Is Tex still there?
I'm still here.
Hey, Tex,
one thing real quick, Dan.
Okay, so go ahead.
I remember a guy who used to live in Washington, D.C. that would call the 800 number, and they would set it down and let him listen to the games on the radio.
Yeah, and then we started getting questions of why do we have these long bills in the middle of in the middle of the night or on weekends?
Go ahead, Dan.
So, Tex, I was reading about there was a long piece about the San Diego Padres having a disappointing season in the San Diego Union Tribune, and one of the central pieces was that maybe Manny Machado, as gifted as he is and as talented as he is, maybe doesn't set the best example for the role players on the team as a star. And a paragraph in that reminded me of some things I feel like you've said on the show before, where it was, according to several veterans, what does not exist in a team with a winning culture doesn't include the best players being the hardest workers and those players demonstrating in word and deed to the rest of the team what is expected and tolerated. Even if you're the most talented guy, you still have to be the hardest worker. I feel like that's a point you've made.
Without question. What do you think makes Cadillac Williams such a great guy and a great coach and a great player? Other than his athletic ability.
Yep.
Hard worker guy. I mean, just unbelievably hard worker. So I agree with that 110%. So I thought you were going to bring up the Brent Strom comment, and I'll let that go. We'll talk baseball later.
Yeah, really.
All right, Tex.
All right, guys. Take care. All right.
334-321-1390, and Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, a little advice for everybody out there. If you've got a free weekend and you really love college football and want to get out, go visit some other places. I had a chance to go this weekend up to Clemson with my Clemson graduate father-in-law. We took all our kids and went to the game up there and, you know, had a blast. It's fun to get out and, like, go enjoy a ball game where you don't have a rooting interest. I know that's hard for a lot of people in college football, but if you've got an opportunity to do it, go do it. You'll have a blast. So having not been able to watch the ball game this weekend, my biggest concern is definitely going to be like reading that Keontae Scott is out and that we had a hard time with the punt return.
Yep.
Fielding the punts.
Yeah.
Like go watch LSU last year against Florida State and this year against Florida State and find out how quick you'll lose a ball game because you can't catch a punt.
It's the most important play in football because if something goes wrong, it's just an enormous shift of momentum one way or the other. And yeah, turnover from a turnover from your punt returner can be the difference between winning or losing a close game.
I've seen Auburn go through spells. I remember Trey Smith being back there, and you hoped that he knew where it was going and that he was going to get under it in time.
Yeah.
To be comfortable catching it because he had a bunch of them that he was always falling on the ground and it bounced away from him. Like,
see, and I seem to remember.
You want to have a heart attack in the stands. Don't trust your punt returner to catch the punt.
But with Trey Smith, I seem to remember Trey Smith being more or less reliable except for one nightmare game. Wasn't there like an LSU game where he muffed like two or three, I want to say maybe on the road, and that sort of earned him a reputation. But he was, for much of his career, he didn't make spectacular plays, but he would catch the ball fairly cleanly, which was what...
He was fairly okay at catching it, but he would catch it falling down and slide. Like, it was never comfortable. Like, you didn't feel good about him being back there. And that's, like, for our coaching staff, like, you want to talk about stressing some folks out, worry about whether or not your guy can catch a punt. Or have to be in a situation where you just got to tell your guy, unless it's kicked right to you, don't go get it, and watch the field position that you lose with the ball bounding down the field.
I would guess without Keontae around, I mean, he named some names today at the press conference, right?
Yeah, he did. Jalen Simpson, of course, who got in there and fielded a punt for Auburn. Along
talk
with
about
Coy
J.D.
Moore,
Rem.
Caleb Burton.
The punt return. Right, Caleb.
Punt return.
Caleb's the guy that's, you know, we saw out early this year.
So those are some guys that are going to get a look this week.
Yeah. Golly, you do worry about a guy getting the opportunity for the first time in front of 100,000 people.
Yep.
That's what I was fixing to say. Like, it's not just a physical thing. Like, it's not just physically being able to catch a ball that's kicked 100 feet up in the air and spinning and everything else. It's knowing that you've got 11 guys from the other team bearing down on you that if it just goes wrong for half a second, you're going to end up like Travis Hunter with a lacerated liver. And, you know, like it is a mental thing. Like it takes some big brass ones to do that job.
What was the, now this past Saturday, VAR, did he not play at all or was he out there?
He played early.
Was it just, but not as a receiver, right? Wasn't it just on the returns?
I did not see him on the field as a receiver. I saw him go in as a punt returner on the maybe the first punt.
See, I thought that was
Keontae was out. Came out, and I thought it was VAR on the very first punt return, and then I didn't see him again.
And I think VAR, was that the one in front of us where he was waving fair catch the ball arrived, and it sort of like VAR was late to signal fair catch on a punt return. Ball hit him while he was still signaling fair catch. He jumped on it. It wasn't a turnover.
Right.
But I don't think he was.
I think that may have been the day for him.
And now Coy Moore returned, I want to say, 8 punts in his LSU career. So maybe he has a leg up on the job with experience in big stages because, you know, it's going to be less foreign to him than anyone else on the team. Maybe they try somebody who has not done the job before.
Hey, and okay, so now second question, completely off this topic. Right now, you've got to put an uncomfortable amount of money on the team you think is going to win the SEC West. Who is it?
I mean, LSU. I'm still putting it on LSU.
I think. Yeah. I get why people would back Bama. And
I got to see better quarterback play and better offensive line play from them.
Look, guys, they've never been there before. Ole Miss has got the best win of anybody in the West right now. That win at Tulane was a good win.
It was, but Tulane didn't have their quarterback.
I think. Better win. You're right, because I was gonna say not necessarily tough. I mean, Bama and LSU played, Florida State and Texas. They didn't win those games. Yeah,
right.
Good
point.
They didn't win. Right. That was not. And even just the way the game played out, I know Tulane had their backup quarterback. That was a dogfight.
Like, it was.
To go down there and win that ball game.
I need to see it Saturday. I get what you're saying.
Yep.
I believe it, but I don't want to be the guy who thinks the monster's dead in the horror movie before. You know what I mean? We have this kind of talk, and then Alabama wins by 21 on Saturday.
But the monster's not even your defending SEC West champ. I'm not worried. But at this point, after game one, there's nothing about that monster that should scare anybody right now. If you're a football player playing for anyone in the SEC West, there is nothing intimidating about Alabama right now.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Okay.
I want to see what happens.
That's 2 weeks in a row that Alabama's been beaten at the line of scrimmage.
I don't disagree with that. I've seen it. This has been going on way too long for me to just, I'm with Dan. It's like, I'll believe it. I'm not going to turn out the light and turn my back.
Yeah.
Like they do in a lot of movies. So
they may win 10 ball games this year, but like I said, you, there's nothing intimidating about them. You shouldn't go into a ball game expecting them, not with any of the teams in the West that I've seen to this point, that would make you think that Alabama's going to beat somebody by 3 touchdowns, which is what they've been doing.
They didn't beat a lot of people by 3 touchdowns last year. So yeah,
they didn't, and they didn't make it to Atlanta.
That is true.
All right, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jeremy. I mean, if you're not an Alabama fan, you want to believe that that's the case. But we've got to see it.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, this is a huge game.
For everything Ole Miss has accomplished this year, and for as bad as Alabama has looked in the first 3 weeks of the season at times, they're a 7-point favorite at home, in Tuscaloosa, mm-hmm. because, I mean, I need to see it on the field, and I think a lot of people do too, where I get why folks think Ole Miss is going to win. I get why, it could signify something very different in the SEC. Let's see what happens on Saturday.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break. Right back with more of your calls. Chris, you'll be up first when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, sports fans, live at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 24 minutes after 5 o'clock, and let's get right back to the phones. And Chris is up next. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Good afternoon, guys. I was calling about Texas' call about December 2nd in Brian's article about 1989. And, you know, December 2nd has been a very important date for Auburn great football victories. You guys know what else happened on December 2nd in an Auburn victory?
That was a 17-16 game.
Yes.
Punt, Bama, punt?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yep. Punt, Bama, punt. And to this day, Gary Sanders, who I think was a fabulous broadcaster for Auburn, at least when I was growing up. I mean, I grew up with Gary Sanders. But at the end of that broadcast, he said, when we're old and gray, we're going to think back to December 2nd, 1972, when Auburn came from 16-0 to win. And this day, a buddy of mine, since that day, every December 2nd, we said, when we're old and gray, and we celebrate the anniversary.
Nice. That's really nice. It's amazing the run Auburn's had of great announcers, right? I mean, Jim Fife. Going back to Sanders, of course, and just one after the other. It's just been incredible.
I thought one of the two SEC championship wins was on December 2nd, but that's not true.
Yeah,
the 04 and 2010 SEC championship games were on December 4th.
Yeah. Well, I would count on Bill to know that December 2nd.
Yeah, where were you?
I was in the stadium with my father.
I was in the stadium holding a shaker that had broken in half when I picked it up with the two pieces with the cracked piece and had my thumb over is when we blocked the first punt.
Oh, okay.
So I did not let go of that shaker.
What was the scene like after that game?
It was insane. It was it was crazy. There was a girl in front of us whose hair caught on fire. she'd had a little alcohol had been sprayed, and then somebody back then people were smoking in the stands and stuff. You know, students were, and the girl's hair literally. I mean, it went like she had hairspray and alcohol on it, and it was just like.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's scary.
But she didn't care.
According to legend, that's what distracted the Bama punter.
No, that was after the game. And I meant to mention this the other day when I was talking to somebody. I was talking to an Alabama person the other day for some reason about that thing. I'll never forget is going on the field. Are there a couple of things? I don't know that I've mentioned these on the air.
Going
on the field.
Statute of limitations.
Going on the field. I will not mention the guy's name. Going on the field and being out near midfield. Where Bear Bryant had the trooper there with him, and a fellow that I know said, I'm getting his hat. I swear, he grabbed the houndstooth hat. A billy club came flying, blank, ducked. It hit an unsuspecting person, knocked them out. He got the hat. He bronzed the hat.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Are you kidding?
I am serious.
Oh, my God.
That's a good story.
It's probably still too dangerous for him to let anybody know that he has it because there's no telling.
Just going
to
bury
no telling
him
what some Alabama fans would do to him.
Maybe the statute of limitations hasn't expired.
That's why I'm not mentioning his name or where he's from or anything.
Hell, he could sell that for $1 million on eBay.
You're probably right about that. That and then seeing Shorty Price – teetering on one of the pillars, pillars there at Legion Field. He was still sitting there, had no idea where he was or who'd won the ball game, but that was the case with him a lot.
That hat needs to be under glass next to the Heisman trophies on Auburn.
You're right about that. On display.
That is unbelievable. That might be right there with the kick six ball that I think Jay Jacobs has or something. So that's pretty good.
Oh, man. Chris, great stuff.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. We'll get one more before we get to our bottom of the hour break. John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I'll be pretty concise. I heard your prior caller. There's an excellent book out called Teammates for Life, which goes into detail about the 1972 team. I highly recommend it. It's a good read for everyone. But two quick thoughts. I understand Auburn baseball got a huge commitment last week, but I couldn't get a determination who that was. And, two other quick thoughts. I bet if you took a poll of most Auburn people right now, we would gladly trade a trip to Texas A&M for a home game against Alabama this coming weekend. I'd love to bring them in right now. I think Auburn would
win
them.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you? You're absolutely right. Left-handed pitcher, I believe, from Baker. Brian's looking.
Yeah, I know.
He's a big lefty. who throws in the upper 90s, if
Baker,
I'm not mistaken.
Baker, Florida?
Yeah, no, Baker, Alabama.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll find that here in a minute.
850 alarm was going off there, Bill. You said Baker, you know, I was thinking.
No.
Maybe, you know, what, he played Milton and some of the other?
Baker, Florida was in our conference. No, this is Baker, Alabama, down in Mobile.
And just one final thought, guys. There may be a lot of people that feel the same way I do. There may be some that don't, but I will be rooting for Bo Nix this coming weekend. That's all I got. I appreciate it.
Big game for them.
Absolutely. They're, yeah, what, like about three touchdown favorites, yeah, I believe.
Now, I don't find myself rooting against Deion. Like, I think there's a contingent of fans that want to see this, you know, want to see the bubble burst, you know, want to see this thing, you know, want to see the right end. I'm not there, but I do want, I want to see the best for Bo Nix. Like, I think it'd be really cool for him to have a special championship season before his college career is over. And I'm not good at this, Brian, but I also think he looks like a pro. Like, I don't know, I'm bad at predicting what quarterbacks are going to play well on Sundays and which ones aren't from the college game. But, like, Bo Nix, to me, has a lot of what you would want your NFL quarterback to have these days. And I could see why, you know, maybe his career isn't over when he's done playing at Oregon.
I mean, he's going to get a shot for sure.
Oh, he definitely will get a shot.
There's no question about that. And I think as time moves on, people need to appreciate what he accomplished here under very, very tough circumstances. Beat Alabama as a true freshman, which is not easy to do under any circumstances, especially Nick Saban, Alabama. And certainly, you know, he didn't have a lot of great talent around him at times when he was here, too. So,
well, and had the COVID season, yep, which threw, you know, everything for a loop in 2020. Yep. I thought the win over Oregon in his first game. I mean,
That's right.
Multiple memorable moments from that 2019 season.
Oh, yeah.
That Bo Nix was
and the other big thing he did was he went and beat LSU in Baton Rouge for the first time in more than two decades, which is a really big accomplishment. And I mean, when is Auburn going to win again there? I don't know. It may be another 20 years, maybe this year, maybe it'll be. But that's a tough place for any team to win, especially Auburn, especially when you have phantom whistles and crazy fourth down throws and all the other earthquakes, all the other stuff that's happened down there when I was visited. But the pitcher, Connor Gatewood, or Gatwood, it's G-A-T-W-O-O-D. He is a big right-hander.
Oh, righty, okay.
About 6'5", 6'6".
Is he from Baker? Was I just completely lost?
I'll check that in to say. He does throw 97, 98 fastball, tops out there, has a changeup and slider, 6'6", 6'5". Looks like a really good player for Auburn, the pickup there. I think, yeah, he is from Baker. Yep.
Good. At least I had that right. Yep. Had the wrong arm, but I had the right school. All right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Brett, hang on. You're up when we come back for the final half hour here on the Monday Drive.
Tried to run the ball, really couldn't in the A&M game, but that Miami quarterback just torched him through the air and made up for it. I'm curious if Auburn can be able, you know, if Auburn can employ a similar strategy, because it seems like A&M's going to dare Auburn to run the ball and count on their secondary to win those one-on-one matchups.
Still there, Brett?
Yeah.
I guess not.
Appreciate the phone call, Brett. Great stuff.
Yeah, and Jerry, if you get a chance, give us a call back. 334-321-1390. Yeah, one of the things, Brian, we were talking about at the very top, Keontae Scott being out,
yep,
that's going to shuffle things in the secondary. Nehemiah Pritchett has not been out there. Donovan Kaufman did not play this past week after having a concussion or suffering concussion symptoms during the Cal game. So, I mean, Auburn's got – that was the area defensively we felt, man, this is the strength of Auburn's team. And Auburn's fortunate they were as deep, but now – I mean, you're gonna see some moving around as they try to at least, you know, keep a little bit of depth throughout the secondary.
I mean, and it has been thin. Kai and Lee, a true freshman, started the first three games because Nehemiah's been out. I am expecting Donovan Kaufman to be back this week and to be that starter at the star position or nickel, however you want to call it. There's a possibility they'll move J.D. Rim over to star and move Caleb Wooden back to safety. I think that's where they like him.
Yeah, I think Caleb just
feels like he fits there better.
Feels a little more Yeah, a little more of a fit.
Evan Stewart's one of the best receivers in the conference. So this is a big challenge for whoever.
Big challenge.
I mean, it's DJ James. I would think it's DJ James most of the time. If Nehemiah can go, maybe Nehemiah will be placed on him. But trying to slow down. I mean, even in the Miami game, Evan Stewart had 11 catches for 120, 130 yards, and Miami secondary played pretty well in that game. So. It's that's one of the biggest challenges for stopping A&M is not letting that receiver just go down the field.
I think that's one of the reasons they want to put JD at that nickel slash star because you need a guy who can cover Texas A&M's third receiver because they've got guys that can beat you in a lot of different ways. And I do think there's a pretty good chance of Nehemiah Pritchett being back too, which would be really big for that secondary.
Apparently, he made the trip out to Cal, and he was dressed out pregame. Apparently, though, he just hadn't felt right trying to warm up either of the last 2 weeks.
And we saw him in practice last week, too. Yep. So you would think that's a good sign, but we'll see. We got to get to game day.
334-321-1390. Jeff is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing fine.
Good, good. A couple things to take away from the game the other night. I thought it was a great game for Thorne to unleash himself. I heard a couple callers earlier talking about it was Stanford, but it doesn't matter. It was about the execution. The opponent didn't matter. We have to show that we'll be able to move that ball, and that's going to be a key this week. I think the difference is going to be the downfield passing game. A&M, I believe, is going to sell out to stop our running game. So if Thorne can find some of those seam patterns, I think we can hook up with Hollywood, Fair. I believe those guys are fast enough and quick enough to get openings. And the big tree tight end, I love him. I just think they need to incorporate him more in this passing game. That kid's a ball player from what I've seen.
He's probably Auburn's best receiver. Certainly catches the ball better than anybody in the receiving corps, in my opinion, and can make a play in the red zone.
Well,
absolutely.
I mean, Hugh Freeze loves to talk about catch radius, and he's got it.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key. For whatever reason, we're just not using the passing game more. And that's supposedly Freeze's forte, the downfield game. I realize you're dealing with a lot of interchangeable parts, but at some point you're going to have to unleash this offense. It's the big time right now.
I just think he's been looking for the guys to make the plays other than – Rivaldo there at receiver, the outside guys. He likes what he's got there in the slot. There's no question about that. He's got three guys he likes in the slot with Jay Fair, Var, and Caleb Burton.
Oh, yeah. Also, with respect for the game Saturday, I was looking at the forecast.
Hot.
Looks like it's going to be hot over there.
Yeah, my wife was checking that.
Really?
97.
That means in the morning, high 80s. You might as well say mid to 100 with that field condition.
Oh, yeah.
Over there. I know they're not listening to me, but I would strongly consider, is there any thought of them leaving out on like a Thursday evening and spend all day Friday to get acclimated? And, walk through practice Friday and be ready for the game on Saturday morning.
They went to California on Thursday, and Hugh Freeze wasn't thrilled about it. So I don't think they're going to Texas on Thursday.
No. They'll fly out Friday afternoon, I would expect.
Hugh Freeze doesn't want it sounds like Hugh Freeze really doesn't want multiple nights in a hotel before a game. That was his
No, I think you're right. I mean, the other thing is, I know it hasn't been that hot lately, but Auburn's practiced in that kind of heat a few times here leading up to the season.
Yeah. And one last thing, I think the big concern with that is with the injury situation and mm-hmm. with the heat, that takes its toll on your depth.
Oh, no question.
I hate to think that, but, I hope they have a way of rotating those guys, especially those big monsters up front. That's going to be the key. I think we'll be okay in the secondary. I don't think A&M is going to, just all out sling it all over the field. I've looked at some of their highlights. It doesn't look like they're doing that.
They're throwing it about 60% of the time, Jeff.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, but they don't really scare me. They got Stewart. I think if our big guys up front, and we got a good rotation of big guys up front, I think if those guys can do their job and and make, you know, and make, what's his name, Wegerman, if he can get rid of that ball, I think we'll be okay if that front.
Well, that's the key. If they can get Connor Wegman, you know, a little antsy, but boy, he's looked pretty good here early on. Looked like Jimbo, you know, may have picked the right guy this time, and Bobby Petrino knows a little bit about the passing game.
It's funny you mentioned depth, Jeff, because, I think the most important part is going to be how does Auburn's front seven play for four quarters in that heat and those elements, because A&M's going to try to run the ball all game long, especially if it's close. And that second half in a game like that, that's where the question is, all right, well, how good's your second team defensive line? How good is your second team linebacker group? Because that's where, you know, the best teams in the SEC have stacked depth, and they've got guys they can go to in the third quarter and the fourth quarter when the starters are fatigued. Does Auburn have defensive linemen they can go to when the starters are fatigued that they feel good about in the second half of this game? Does Auburn have linebackers that they can go to when the starters are fatigued in the second half of this game? That I think is going to be a big part of what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge, huge deal in this game. And one last thing, you guys were harking back to that 1989 Iron Bowl. Mm-hmm. I remember vividly. I was actually living in Nevada, and I was nervous all that week leading up to that game, because I remember it was a CBS game. I don't know if you guys remember who called that game. It was Jim Nance.
I didn't know.
Yeah, Nance and Pat Hayden was the callers on that game for that Saturday. And the John Dockery worked the sidelines. I'll never forget that game. It was an unbelievable atmosphere just watching it on TV. And I talked to some family that was living here, and they were just, they just couldn't believe the atmosphere, you know. And that I will always remember that game, that early December game. So
I know that
brought back memories.
I know Vern didn't call all of those games, but like in my head,
Vern weren't there then.
I know. In my head, when I think back to games from the 90s and the 2000s, I think about like, it's Vern Lundquist. I guess it's generational, right? Like whoever you have, when you think back to like, oh yeah, who's calling those games back then? But yeah, it was Nance for I think much of the 80s and 90s on some of the biggest games.
Well, Nance, and if you remember, it was Musburger and the late Parsegian, Errol Parsegian, calling a lot of those games.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, back in those days, yeah, it was Musburger was the number one play-by-play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys.
Great stuff, Jeff. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our final break. We lost Rusty. Rusty, if you get a chance, give us a call back.
Rusty.
As we wind things down here on the Monday Drive.
You can help others in your community. Opelika Share is a way.